Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson, and we head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline, where we get to say hello to our good friend, longtime friend, Tom Hart of ESPN and the SEC Network, doing a fantastic job of encouraging those to make most of any downtime by reading and other things like that. Classic games, commentary, you name it. It's all available at Tom_Hart if you want to follow along on Twitter. Tom, how are you?
John, I'm fantastic. Thanks for having me today. Always great to chat with you guys.
Well, we certainly appreciate your time and certainly hope that the Hart household is safe and strong through all of this.
Yeah, well, we're not very strong, but we're safe. We've never been a strong household. We decided we weren't going to make varsity years ago, so we gave up on the weightlifting. We're just kind of trying to slide through life.
Very nice. As we wait for the return of activity, we have seen a number of classic games, and normally you would have just finished an incredibly busy week with the SEC tournament in Hoover and would have enjoyed, like the rest of us, another Selection Monday with Memorial Day and would now be, of course, waiting to jump on board with whichever regional assignment you would have drawn. How different has this spring been, considering that it's been more than 10 weeks since we've seen college baseball?
Wow, 10 weeks. That's unbelievable. It's been, I've never been through it in my life as an adult, in my life, in total. But I was thinking the other day, I don't remember, I started working in minor league baseball before I earned my degree from Missouri. I don't remember having Memorial Day off ever. Even if it was Memorial Day weekend and I was working on the TV side and calling SEC baseball or ACC baseball or combination of both, and then getting ready for the NCAA tournament, which I've been lucky to do for years. So it's a new reality. It's sobering in many ways, and it helps us appreciate, in my mind, just what we have when we do have it. And it's caused me to do more planning and looking ahead to see, hey, what's next? When will this stuff start back up? And what will college football look like if we can get there? And how many lives have been impacted by this just on the sports side of it? That's obviously where we focus. But so many people have been impacted in a negative way. I look forward to the chance and the time where we can impact lives in a positive way.
Hey, Tom, do you think that regarding college football, the NCAA should step up and say we need to have uniformity? Or do you think because certain areas are better off than others that they should allow the conferences to make those determinations?
Jimmy, that's a wonderful question. By the way, I'm glad that these decisions aren't on my head, because there are some really tough decisions being made on campuses and in conference offices across the country. I look at this two different ways. I think that we need to understand that in anything we do, and if we want to dial this down to college football, it fits. In anything we do, we are codependent on others. People within the SEC are codependent upon their conference mates to make sure that they are doing everything that they can to make sure their facilities are clean, that their players are healthy, so that when they do meet on the field, whether that's college football or women's soccer or volleyball, that everyone is as healthy as can be. And they're also codependent upon what, non-conference opponents. And I think that can get really tricky when you ask for people who don't have the same budgets that exist in the SEC to take the same level of precautions. But because not only is this different geographically and in different hotspots and affecting major cities different than rural areas and vice versa, and kind of moving like an amoeba throughout our country, I think not only should conferences have the ability to call their own shots and figure out what's right for them, but then there will be individual schools within those conferences who might say, it's not right for us to play, or while you guys may not be ready to play, we are, and it fits us. So I think individuality with respect to codependency, which sounds like a contradiction, I think that should rule the day when it comes to making decisions based on when you start practicing, when you start playing, and most importantly, who do you play, and can you keep your players safe?
So do you think that the SEC could possibly say, okay, we got 12 teams ready to play, let's go, but these other two are not, so you can sit this out? Do you think the SEC would proceed under those circumstances?
I 100% believe they would. I think, the American Conference under Commissioner Mike Oresko has already said that they would go that direction. Geographically, they're way more spread out than the SEC is. But you just look at, leadership from a political standpoint, and there are states taking different tacks right now. I live in Atlanta, as you guys know, and what we've been doing in Georgia is drastically different than what's been happening in Kentucky to this point. Not to say that we won't end up at the same point in the future, whether that be July, August, September. There's people going different directions. And Mike Oresko even said, listen, our partners in the American Conference understand that if two of them can't play, they're not going to hold the other nine back. And I believe that to be the case in the SEC. I think that if there's one or two programs that aren't allowed to play either because of their local politics or because their campus simply isn't safe, I don't think they would hold an entire conference back, nor do I think they should. And if the shoe was on the other foot, and this is unprecedented in many ways, but who knows what lies in our future, I think they would expect and respect the same from their conference mates if they found themselves in a different situation in years to come.
Our guest, Tom Hart, as he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline, Tom of ESPN and the SEC Network. What has it been like to just see, and you, I'm sure, been a part of some of these conversations yourself with all the Zoom teleconferences and or press conferences, whether it be a player switching teams in the NFL or coaches allowing themselves to chat when they would have been recapping spring practice, things like that. What has it been like to look at the new form of communication for so many to stay up to date?
Well, I think it's really neat in many ways, John, because you get to learn a lot more personalities. And I know this is a little bit different than what you're asking about, but I thought the golf this weekend was just sensational. Those of us who have spent any time around Peyton or the Manning family expected that level of sense of humor and the ability to play to a room that came from, comes from Peyton, obviously, but obviously originates in Archie. And I thought he was wildly entertaining. The lines that he had about refusing to wear Tiger's Sunday red because he didn't want Kirby Smart putting any pictures on social media was fantastic. And seeing, Tom Brady, who's married to a supermodel, struggle in any aspect of his life. I think for people who weren't Patriots fans, they got a kick out of that. But then when he holed that shot from 110 or whatever the distance was, I thought, what a perfect snapshot of why us duffers love golf. You can play terrible all day, and you're going to hit that one shot that's going to keep you coming back. And if it's good enough for Tom Brady, it's good enough for a lot of people. And I just think it's interesting to see of the sports personalities out there, those people who find it important to reach out to their fan base and to be accessible and to show their personality. I think that's been really neat to follow. And let's not make any mistake about it. I think probably some of them are doing it because they're bored. And we've all been a little bit bored over the last 2 months. There's no doubt.
Well, I don't think there's any question in that regard. There was the saving grace that was The Last Dance, and then there was also and we've been blessed to carry, and we will again this Saturday, Vol Network Classics, whether it be football or basketball. We've seen a lot of classic games replayed. As busy as you have been, and some of your work has also been highlighted by ESPN or the SEC Network, have you had the chance to catch a game that perhaps you didn't get to earlier because you were simply working somewhere else that day?
You know what, John? This might sound sacrilegious to some, but I've actually taken a pretty good-sized break from sports altogether. When I get up in the morning, the scoreboard I check, it comes from the CDC, and I encourage everyone to educate themselves and to follow the numbers and be as wise as you can to what's going on. It's never too late to educate yourself and to be able to follow these trends and make decisions based on you and your family and being safe and being healthy. And I love The Last Dance. I watched every minute of it live, and I devoured it, and I talked about it with my friends, and we all grew up in that era, and we loved Michael Jordan and the Bulls. But I just haven't been in a mood to really go back and watch any really old games. It's been a nice break just to be with the family and to kind of be low key and to not have to, you know, we all live our lives, I think, similarly, that even when we're not working, if it's 7 o'clock on a weeknight, whether the Braves are playing or the Reds are playing or, you know, it's Monday Night Football coming around, we rush to the TV and turn it on and we're glued to it. And I think it's been a nice break for a lot of people to say, you know what, let's eat dinner at the table with the family and let's sit down and watch Harry Potter or something that we can do with the kids. And when sports come back around, I'll be primed and well-rested and ready to go.
Well, then you can give us the honest interpretation. How pleased was your son with joining the Hart family tradition of dad cutting son's hair?
Well, he was as pleased as any Hart kids have been, which is not pleased at all. he didn't understand why it was necessary, and it was finally my excuse to break out the clippers and go to work. When my brother and I were in grade school, we infamously had one of those nights, and I showed up to school the next day with a cut above my ear, and my brother showed up with a stripe up the back of his head. So continuing that tradition, totally unintentionally, but my son did go to bed with a scab on his ear that night where the clippers got away from me, and I told him, I said, listen, as soon as this pandemic is over, you never have to deal with this again.
Tom, I want to get your take on Oklahoma. So they have announced that they're going to reopen things for athletes to return July the 1st. Now, what I find interesting about that is that there were a couple of coaches out there, like Brian Kelly and Will Muschamp, that said they need 8 weeks to get ready. Well, Lincoln Riley said, hey, we only need 2 weeks to get ready. Would that surprise you at all, then, that Oklahoma would be opening later than probably most other Power 5 schools?
Well, Jimmy, it's so interesting. Everyone kind of has their own game plan, and that's what I found very interesting. I actually was in an athletic director's office last week in the SEC, and he was walking through their game plan and how they were going to reopen and what they were going to do, and it was different than I expected, and it was different than I heard at other schools. And I think it goes to show that every school is leaning on their experts, either on campus or through their connections, epidemiologists and scientists and doctors and such, and they're all getting information that's a little bit different. Lincoln Riley made no bones about it early on. He said, we can't return to play football. We're not going to be ready. And I thought he took a pretty staunch stance right out of the gate. You know, if you remember, so too did Matt Campbell, the head coach at Iowa State, and he had a great take on it, I thought. And he played at Mount Union and coached at Mount Union, a Division III powerhouse, and he said, listen, at Mount Union, we didn't have spring ball. We didn't have summer, you know, organized workouts and conditioning. You went home for the summer. You worked out on your own. You showed back up. We had a few weeks of practice. We went out and played, and they win national title after national title. And I thought, what a huge advantage for these coaches who have done more with less over the years. What an advantage to not have those expectations, not just within their program, but also in their own heads and within their staff. And I thought there are guys who approach it that way who are going to be at an advantage mentally with their program. So everyone's going to be coming from a different direction. You know, we don't know if Michigan is going to be holding classes. If you listen to their president, we don't know if they're going to have a football season, even though Ohio State has said they will. We don't know what's going to happen in the state of California. I think especially schools like Stanford and UCLA, there's reason to question if they would be able to start on time. And even if I think what needs to be remembered is that even if everything goes to plan within these football programs and they start on time, that doesn't mean every key player is going to be there on time. And so what do programs look like on September 5th versus what they look like on November or December 5th? And do we take into account, and this is putting the cart way before the horse, Jimmy, but do we take into account how teams will evolve over the course of the season when they will get off to such an uneven start. It might be a good time for all these coaches to reread the parable about the tortoise and the hare, because it will be how you finish, not how you start.
Do you think that there's a chance that we will see some games without fans and then other venues with 30%, 50% of fans in the stands?
My opinion on that changes with the wind, Jimmy, and it's just my opinion because I only go by what we hear from news reports and folks that we talk to. But like I said before, everyone has a different attitude. If you would have asked me that 3 weeks ago, I would have said there'll be no fans in the stands, no way, no how, at least through September, and maybe they come around in October, November, and wouldn't it be a great celebration if the SEC championship was sold out first weekend of December and they could go from there. That tune has changed on local campuses, as we know recently. So if you ask me today, I would say, well, most schools would probably have, you know, a 30% capacity or the like, but we got to just be smart about this because what we learn and what happens evolves every day. And where we were, even just looking at the CDC numbers, where we were 10 days ago in Georgia looked great. Where we are today does not look so great. Our highest, and I know this is based on, you know, the testing capacity, but our highest rate of infections was not in mid-March or early April. It was 9 days ago in the state of Georgia. And if we stay that high, well, it's going to be really hard to put people in football stadiums. If we can get that back down, maybe we look at it differently. So to answer your question, I'm not a betting man except to say that expect the unexpected. We'll probably change our mind three different times before we get to September 5th. And I'm knocking on all the wood around me that we can have live college football on September 5th.
Tom, do want to ask and get your reaction to the fact that the XFL is up for sale and you've got at least 20 that have completed the paperwork to show they're interested in making a bid for it, six more, either individuals, organizations trying to do the same to put their hat in the ring, and then there's even the suggestion by somebody that says the NFL should step in and take over the league so it could be diverse, add depth, and do so much to kind of create its own feeder and or minor league with spring activity, kind of like a version of winter ball that you see in Arizona. Just what are your thoughts on the interest in the league that you worked for a month?
Well, we got halfway through the season. It was wildly successful, especially when it came to television ratings. The attendance was better than I expected, especially in some very specific markets. Guys, I should have sent you the email. I mean, we could have put together some coins from our couch cushions and put in a bid. I think it's very wise. Somebody's going to get this league for pennies on the dollar, and I think it could be wildly successful long term. There are just so many talented football players out there that don't get an opportunity because that practice squad window closes on you really quick. And as we know, maturation for football players, it occurs at different speeds and different schedules. And I saw real value in some guys that that took the field. P.J. Walker for Houston, Jordan Tiamu played for the St. Louis team, got picked up by the Chiefs. Those are just a couple quarterbacks. There's a lot of other guys out there that prove their worth. I think it's going to come back, and that might be wishful thinking on my behalf, and maybe if it doesn't come back next year, it's 2 years down the road. But I think there's a market and an opportunity for good football in the spring and in the summer.
I can very much appreciate your sharing exactly that you caught a little break and tried to spend more time with not doing as much with sports as you normally would be at this time of year. What is the best book you've read in this last three-month period or two and a half month? And what's the best show that you've streamed, perhaps?
Oh, that's a great question. I've had a handful of really good books. Eric Larson's book, The Splendid and the Vile, was based on diaries from World War II in and around Churchill, his daughter, and the Nazi PR guy Goebbels and the bombings of London. It was just fascinating. And there were some very much some similarities into what they were going through at the time in terms of what London was going through and what our nation's stresses have been over the last 2 months. It was interesting to see the leadership differential between, you know, what Churchill did from an information standpoint. And Beneath the Scarlet Sky was another one that I really liked, and I'm reading one now. I'm usually into nonfiction, but a fiction book called Beartown, which is about a youth hockey team up in the Northeast, which has been really good. And to dial it back, we went back and we watched all the Harry Potters with the family, and that stands up. That's pretty good. I did also, sidebar, I made my kids watch Tommy Boy just to make sure that they were, you know, along the same trend that I was at that age, and they all got a kick out of it.
That's wonderful. That's fantastic, and that is sound and solid parenting. Hey, Tom, we always appreciate your time. Thank you so much. We look forward to doing this again much sooner rather than later, but thanks for your insight and can't wait to catch up with you again.
Anytime, guys. Always a pleasure to be on with you. Be good and be safe.
You as well. Thank you. Tom Hart of ESPN and the SEC Network, always gracious with the amount of time that he gives us.